I've got a question that sort of touches on what you were talking about in regards to sex earlier on. I'm not very knowledgeable about Tibetan practices, but I know you've got the tantric tradition.
Right.
Is there a way you can use, you know, that the desire that you have, so you're out there day to day, you see someone pretty, and you know, it can sometimes be regarded as a hindrance.
Sure.
Yeah. But is there a way you can turn that to your advantage? Could you sit down in meditation, bring that sort of thing up and channel it in a good way?
Yeah, definitely. Did you hear that? Do I need to repeat that? No. Okay. Everyone could hear? Yeah. So, yeah, this is a really important question, actually, I think. So one option is, it's a hindrance, cut it, put the mind, go to your soles of the feet or something, put the mind somewhere else, somewhere neutral, hopefully, and away from that, because it's a hindrance, because it's desire, and because it's dangerous, playing with fire, you know. So that's completely valid, and you need to be able to do that sometimes. Really important, and so meditation practice of just bringing the mind back over and over, that muscle of being able to wrench it away from what it's become entangled in and bring it back, it develops, that muscle gets stronger. Yes, that's important, I'm not neglecting that. But, you know, one option is, there are actually many options, but I'd just say one because it's the simplest, okay? Usually what happens for most people when what you're describing happens, or you're sitting in meditation and it's not you're seeing, that they come into the mind, someone or some sexual image or something, usually the mind gets lost in the image and lost in fantasy, and that's the negative meaning, that's daydreaming, that's the negative connotation of fantasy, there's not the mindfulness there, and actually it's not so in contact with the bodily feeling. Okay, if I almost let the fantasy do its thing, but don't give that the attention. Pry my attention loose from the fantasy and back to the body, without trying to chop anything or get rid of anything or shove something back down in the hole where it came from or whatever. None of that, but actually pay attention to the bodily feeling. What I will find is that there is sexual, what can we call it, sexual energy in the body. Okay. And if I just feel it as energy and open up a space for it, that energy is very close to what the Pali word is piti, which is a kind of rapture or bliss that comes from concentration. So energy is energy is energy. It can kind of get directed subtly in different directions. So there's a thing, mind, blah, 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 come to the body. So just let that be, but come attention to the body, fill it out like we've been doing in the meditation. So fill it out, allow that energy to do its thing. So it doesn't stay located in one area of the body. That's the thing. If you open up, it will spread. And that's nice, and it becomes nice energy spreading in the body. And that's what I'm allowing and enjoying. And it will slightly transform the energy, but it takes a lot of the compulsive, sort of locked in nature of the lostness there. So that would be, the more you do that, the easier it will become, and you can almost like glide between energies, so to speak. Does that make sense?
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So that would be the simplest. Just, is that okay?
It's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So practice.
Is that something like sort of going out day to day?
That's good. Yeah. Probably it will be easier on the cushion first.
Yeah.
With the ash. So what, especially if you're busy in, you know, Oxford Street and there's so much stimulation. But the more practice, that's why we use this word practice, the more practice you get on the cushion, the more it actually becomes something you can do on the fly, so to speak, and with a lot of complexity of sensory stimulation. But I'd probably develop your chops, is that a sort of musical phrase? Do you understand what that means? It's like, develop your capacity to do that.
Yeah?
And see how it goes. Yeah, but really important question, and this is much more common than people tend to, the much more common than the question gets raised publicly. It's important. Yeah. So thank you. Yeah. Yes.
So I had a question. If you have an image, how much do you work with it actively? I think that's one of the reasons why people say, "Well, this is not bare attention," because if it's bare attention, it'll just leave you.
Well, that's an interesting thing. Could everyone hear that? Mm-hmm. How much do you work with the image, and that's why it's not bare attention? Because if it's bare attention, the image will leave you. So, bare attention is a very problematic teaching. But let's go with it. So it's an important teaching. It's just it runs into problems. But let's say I can give bare attention to an image, okay? But you see, part of the problem with bare attention is it's not bare. There's no such thing as bare attention. So if the image leaves, it's actually because either I get distracted or my attention is not bare and it has a subtle sense of this is not important or this is papancha or maybe not even as a thought, but a subtle dismissal or disregard may be enough, or I don't like it, I'm a bit afraid of it. And so it's actually not bare. It's got something subtle wrapped up in the attention which has an effect of it. So how much, that relates to the second part of your question, how much do I work with the image? I'm actually always working with it because there's always something or other in awareness that affects the object that awareness is aware of. So, and that goes for physical pain, emotions, I'll come back to this in the afternoon, images, everything. It's always not separate from the way I'm engaging it. So having said that, if I can, and through it in the guided meditation just now, if I can say, let's just throw in the idea very subtly. This image comes, throw in the idea that this is important. There's something here that may be of value. And just entertain that idea. Then it's no longer bare, but it can still be relatively bare in that I can focus, for example, on the, what would you call it, the sense datum of the image itself. Okay, so that's one way, but actually what I want to get to with this strand of practice is it's not so much that's important. Like I said with the bluebird, could have gone right into the feathers and see this delicate filigree of whatnot. That's actually not, to me, that interesting. It's possible for some people. What's more interesting is here's this image, and like I use that bluebird as an example, there was so much delicacy of resonance and love. It was very, very subtle. That's the thing that it's value laden. It's laden with a sense of value. And that's the thing I'm paying attention to as I'm paying attention to the object. Does that make sense? Then there's extending your question, how much I work with it. So this opens up a whole, you know, huge area, because some people say, yes, okay, like that black devil man. Okay, there's the image. Let's make him white, for instance, and take away the horns, because that's really scary, and make him into a bunny rabbit with, you know, whatever, and something cuddly or something. So the ego is basically coming in and deciding to change the image according to what the ego wants. Now, we can do that, and it has a place, and it serves a function. I think what I want to get to with this image business is what ends up being the most interesting thing is not the images themselves, but the conceptual framework that's operated, or frameworks that are possible in relationship to images. So I can put the image in the service of the ego, or I can, again, play with the idea that maybe it has something bigger and more important than the ego's plans for it. And generally I find that this is, that thought itself unfolds something in pretty unexpected directions and much more powerful. To me, it's a more interesting idea. You understand?
I do.
But still, it's not bare attention, because you're almost trusting the image and not the mind's idea of oh, it's grotesque or it's violent or it's weird or whatever. It can't be right. I'm giving you probably more than you asked for.
No,
here,
no,
but
very good.
Part of the reason of introducing this body and energy body thing is that you can use it as a navigator, as a compass. So it seems to me that when an image is right, when it has something for the soul, for the psyche, it might disturb the mind, but something happens in this feeling here. Something becomes integrated. It feels right. There's a sense of alignment and harmony and integration that comes into the energy body that I can recognize, oh, when that's there, I can trust this, it's right, even if it's weird or whatever, violent or something. So I would use that as a compass. And then secondly, use the energy body to feel the resonances that are involved. Have I gone off at a tangent, or is this...
No, it's spot on.
Okay, good. I could say much more, but that's probably enough for now. Yes?
I thought it was interesting that you mentioned ontological, epistemological, and cosmological.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't mention techne.
Techno?
Techne. There's episteme and techne.
Tell me, what's that?
Well, technique and technology.
Yeah.
I've just kind of been lost into hardware. You're talking about techne. You're talking about archetypal means.
Uh-huh. Archetype ends, anyway. Yeah.
And that's techne.
Uh-huh.
And it's know-how.
Know-how.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I find that interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That that's all mythic.
Yeah. Yeah. So the know-how is partly what we just said to this gentleman here. I don't know what your name is.
John,
there's a real. I'm not going into it so much today, but there's a lot of technical possibilities in techne. But part of what you're calling techne is in the very conceptual framework that brings something alive. Yeah.
Subtle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, lovely. This is the case for all Dharma practice, whether it's imaginal, whether I'm sitting trying to be with a knee pain or whatever it is. Always. The idea and the subtle conceptuality affects what happens and what unfolds as part of, I think, what you're calling techne. Yeah, and really, really important. Yeah, it's great. Is that? Yeah? Mm. Good. Please.
I'm new to the imaginal practice.
Yeah.
And I'm still trying to understand what it is you're directing us to pay attention to. Can you say a bit more about what's the difference between just thinking
mm-hmm.
and what you call imaginal?
Yeah, maybe there's not so hard lines here. That's just a first response, I'm not sure. One thing I would say, which is important to say, I'm not sure if it answers your question, but what is important to say, so if I'm not in touch with the body, and what I'm calling the energy body and the sense of resonance there, etc., then I'm just daydreaming, I'm lost, whether it's in thought or in fantasy or whatever, I'm lost. So that's one thing that sets what I would call imaginal practice apart, is that it's very rooted in a sensitivity to the body and an awareness of how what is appearing or what image sense or whatever is resonating in the body and its effects on the emotions and so there will be, or there can be at times, ideas and thinking, even thinking about, like what we said with John, it's like, well, how am I thinking about this image? So that's all fine, completely fine. It can go on. It's like, because, as I said, the conceptual frameworks, A, there's many available, and B, that's part of the whole thing. So it's not a problem if that's part of it. I've got to catch a train later on, and then I have to see someone before that. And I start thinking, if I make that train, then I'll get there at this time, you know. And maybe there's images involved in my planning or worrying about that. It's probably not that's that rich for the, you know. So that's, but that's something you could tell by the way this feels. You understand? But I don't think I've answered your question. Okay, good. Good. Okay. Bill, yeah.
Rob, do you think there's something problematic about the word image? So visual.
Yeah, I do.
It gives you rigid more.
Yeah, totally. That's why I said right. I think I don't know if you were here right at the beginning. Said, there must be a better word. I just don't know what it is yet. So I'll use these words, image, fantasy, and maybe mythos, interchangeably. The problem with image is we think visual object. And that's why I said, look, the conceptual framework, my relationship with it is part of what I'm talking about. And it may not be visual. I said on the guitar or whatever. So yes, definitely. When I say fantasy, the problem is that's got all kinds of connotation of negativity with it. When I say mythos, it has the idea of some set myth of Greek something or other or whatever, and I don't quite mean that either. Can you think of that word? Or?
No, I just know that, like, even during that little meditation, a little image appeared. and I was breathing through it, and I wasn't going to relieve the suffering.
Yeah.
But as soon as I started to daydream and left my body, suffering.
You started to daydream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Suffering came back immediately.
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
As soon as I leave my body,
yeah.
Felt sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I start to suffer pretty quickly.
Sure. Most people do, or the way of leaving the body is a way of not trying not to suffer. But anyway, yeah, you're absolutely right, and that's why I would ground, or I'm trying to ground what I'm calling imaginal practice very much in the sense of the body. And sometimes it will feel like when I imagine those lines, you say breathing through this image or something, or even the breath as image, the body as image, it's very directly grounding the two, grounding imaginal practice in the bodily sense, for the energetic bodily sense. And it might be less direct, but there's always that connection. That's important.
I said breathing through, I meant feeling.
Yeah.
It's more
okay, same. But in this kind of practice, I would probably encourage more this whole body space that you know about, this whole body, the energy space, and then it might be one area in that gets more interesting, or one area feels more or something, but that's all part of a bigger space of awareness, and you're not losing that connection ever, or when you lose it, you come back to it, put it that way. Yeah.
Well, you talked about this woman who, over a long period of time, she had developed a dialogue with this being that initially was frightening, the black-horned guy. But I'm not sure, or at least for me, there wasn't really... I didn't really understand how that was transformed. So, for instance, if one's images are to a significant extent frightening or violent, you know, that are the frightening nightmarish visions that somebody might be prone to and another person not.
Sure.
But if you get a lot of those images,
yeah.
Then I'm not sure I haven't heard you address how to work with those.
Yeah.
See, for instance, and then the idea, I think, one of the ideas that you were saying, you can go towards there's uh-huh. power there's liberation there's freedom there, but they might be very frightening.
Yeah.
So, for instance, when I went to the basement, there was a very frightening image, uh-huh. and I thought, no, I don't think so. When I came back up and I went out the door, then there was something radiant and wonderful. I thought, I'll go with that.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
But I might be meditating, and I might just have more frightening images.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I will address that this afternoon, but I'll say something now as well, because it's important, it's very important. I mean, it's related to what we said with John as well. So I'll repeat this afternoon, but I'll say it now as well. So, you know, we can think of the unconscious. There is the unconscious, this deep, dark sack of terrible monsters that might come up and lurking down there waiting to leap up at any opening crack that they might and oftentimes that's a way, because of certain psychological forms, that's the way we think about it. But what I want to say, and it's so worth repeating, so it applies to image, but it applies to any perception at all, whether it's material or whatever, that the way of relating to it and the way of conceiving always makes a difference. So that if I was working with someone individually, and that was the case, what you're describing, and part of my job, maybe say not now, maybe go more towards the light, but it might be that part of my job is actually communicating or holding a space where it feels safer to begin to approach and approach more meditatively. Because remember, I went back to that schizophrenic thing, what's characteristic is this. That's when it becomes, when I, and just like a nightmare, I'm running away from that monster. That monster's getting bigger and bigger and nastier, and if ever in a nightmare one has actually turned to face the monster, what happens? Oftentimes the monster transforms or something through the relating with. So we're not talking, but in the situation of a person as you're describing, that I would see that if I was working one-on-one as more part of my job to be able to do that. Meditatively, one can also just cultivate more and more a meditative space of well-being, which one then feels very, very resourced, very resourced. It's always available that you can kind of rest in that or have that around something. But if I was working one-on-one, it would be very much my place to to create a safe space, communicate that this is maybe trustable, maybe for a short, and see what happens, and help hold it, and also communicate that it might not be what it appears to be at first. The monster is usually not what it appears to be at first. That black devil story, she didn't know that, really freaked her out. She didn't tell anyone, not her therapist. No. Actually, in hindsight, she was glad that she didn't, because I didn't want it therapized away or interpreted in a certain direction or whatever. But so the transformation of relationship and how that affected her happened much slower than it needed to, much slower, because she was actually like this. But this answer? Yeah, so sometimes you can find your own way to do it. Sometimes it's more like what I would see is my job to help help that a little bit of opening, and then one gains more and more trust in the area, and that transforms the experience. Okay.